Like that may happen at 5:30, I'd like the council's management members and public in attendance to the city of Melbourne, request all mobile phones to turn silent for the duration of the meeting. Respect the rights of the meeting, the official demand for more nation, this place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great metropolis in the world, a significant meeting place. For the core nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Should you have any queries related to the conduct of the meeting, documentation or submission process, please speak with a member of the council business team after the meeting. The agenda comprises one report from management, eight reports from management, seven of which are confidential. An apology has been received from the Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act of 1989 in relation to a matter being considered by council, please disclose the type and nature of interest prior to consideration of the item. I now call on council to move a resolution adopting the openness of the council meeting number 11 held on Tuesday, the 25th of July 2017. Councillor Rokas, that second. Councillor Rees, I'll put back the vote. And that is passed unanimously. Are there any matters arising from this previous open meeting? No. The following submission has been received in accordance with the council's meeting procedures code in relation to agenda item 6.4. Proposed permanent road closure of Elizabeth Street, Melbourne, between Flinders Lane and Flinders Street, Leslie Burger from 5X. In relation to agenda item 6.5, review of the Yirrumbuy First National Arts Festival 2017 and development of the 2019 festival program, Chris Thrum. In relation to agenda item 6.6, Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program, proposed design for the below ground operational area and AED sheds, including preferred digital access point. Items of correspondence by John Magno, Mary Lou Howie, and Tristan Davies. And in relation to item 6.1, the Parks and Gardens Advisory Committee terms of reference 2017-21, and item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. Does any council wish to discuss the confidential status of confidential agenda items 6.12, 6.17? No? There's one report from committee for consideration in the open session, and I call on Councillor Riley. Councillor Riley?
Yes, I'd like to, Acting Lord Mayor, declare the Royal Freemasons has paid advertising content in the magazine unpublished, namely Three of Low Force and the Road.
Thank you. I call on Councillor Rees as Chair of the Planning Portfolio for the Future Melbourne Committee to present agenda item. Agenda item 5.1.
Somebody get the keys.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. This is item 5.1, amendment C300, Epworth Freemason signage. Purpose of this report is to seek council support for the adoption of Melbourne Plan Scheme Amendment C300 Epworth Freemason signage. I move the recommendation contained in the report. I call for the Councillor to second the motion.
A Councillor to second that. Councillor Leavitt. Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Look, this is an amendment which will be familiar to councillors, having been considered by Council back in April. Leave to make or to seek the amendment was granted by the Minister for Planning later on in April. Essentially, it seeks to reclassify this site from Category 4 to Category 3, which is a residential zoning. It still contains a strong number of protections around limits on signage. This amendment, of course, has been sought because the Epworth Hospital is in a very important medical facility in the East Melbourne, and I think all things considered, is an appropriate amendment to allow the hospital to have proper signage, and the residents will have proper signage at a hospital. I'll put to you plus element.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. Councillor Leavitt, any other speakers to this item? I do not offer it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. please ask Councillor Wiley to return. For those of you who are playing on at home, you would notice that our screens aren't working this evening, which is very helpful. So when it comes to any items where we may have different words to digital recommendation, then we'll hopefully be reading those out as they come to us and inform the gallery. There are 11 reports from management for consideration in the open session. The first is 6.1, records of settings of councillors. Would council like a presentation on this item? I'm assuming no. I'll call on council to move this item. Councillor Riley, is that seconded? Councillor Oak, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. Our next item is item 6.2, the 2016-2017 Council Works Programme for Quarter Report, and I call on Rob Adams, Director of City Design and Projects, to make a brief presentation.
Through you, Deputy Lord. The end-of-year programme saw $91.6 million completed works out of the budget of $133.86. While that represented 68% of the delivery and a sizable carry forward, the reason behind that carry forward were numerous. We do hold monies for other agencies for projects that will be carried out in our jurisdiction, and that amounts to, like the state government, and that amounts to a sizable sum. There was increasing difficulty also with getting approvals through agencies, and people like CPAR have become particularly difficult to get approvals and can on many occasions hold up projects for as long as 6 months. So we have rationalised the carry forward and we'll only be taking 21 million of that sum forward into the next financial year. We believe that all the projects will be continued through within that time frame, and this will give us an opportunity to make up a bit of a backlog that we've had on projects.
Thanks, Rob. Any questions for Rob? If not, I'm happy to move this item in the Council Works Programme for the report, and I want the Council to see. Councillor Wright. So thanks, Rob, for just outlining the carry forward. I think we're all aware that coming towards the end of the year that money is moved from one level of government to another, so that's understandable and does occur. When you look at the breadth of the program, the size of the program, obviously the Queen Victoria Market recent renewal, the Metro Tunnel project involvement, South Bank Boulevard, University Square, a lot of these critical open spaces that will be delivered at the south end of Elizabeth Street, the Boyd redevelopment. These are very sizable projects and are going to be a great asset for our community going forward. Just touching briefly in terms of governance of the Capital Works Program going forward, that we're putting in place a lot of different measures, and FU, our CFO, and Rob Adams have been working closely together on tightening up that carry forward for future years. So we're expecting to see this being the biggest year of carry forward, and in future years that will increasingly tighten. Councillor
Oak. As we do whenever we receive these reports, we acknowledge the incredible amount of work that we are committed to and the huge investment we're making in community facilities and infrastructure. These reports are always a good read about what we've committed to and what we're doing, but importantly, the new, as an open agenda item, anyone can see, that where we're on track, where we're maybe a bit delayed, but and provide information as to why. But importantly, planned completion dates are useful. We get a lot of queries from our residents and visitors about when particular projects that we've announced are meant to be completed, and this report provides a lot of that great information about planned completion dates and where we are in the process. So I think everyone that obviously works on these large projects and small projects within council, but also people have put together the documentation to show the tracking. I think it's a really useful piece of communication, essentially, and hopefully those that read our agenda or listen to the meeting can use these documents in the future to see where we're at. applied to and know more about their progress. But I acknowledge the work that we're doing, particularly as well as the acting Lord Mayor has mentioned about the renewal, the carry forward and making sure that we're getting better at being on budget.
Can you just write me on speech this item? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour with raising hands, I declare that carried unanimously. As I said, we have an issue with our screen, so I understand that this next item will actually have some documentation before each of us, which will be helpful. The next item is the 6.3, the Family and Children's Advisory Committee Terms of Reference. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, if not, I call the council to move a motion. Councillor Sullivan, can I have you read the motion that we'll be moving, given we can't see it on screen?
Do you want me to read it out?
Yes, please.
So, currently as it stands?
Seven, that council approves the addition of the following paragraphs of the Family and Children's Advisory Committee's terms of reference and respect for membership under section 12 of the Equal Opportunity Act of 2010, the dedicated Aboriginal membership has been considered to support Aboriginal representation on the committee. This special measure recognises the importance of Aboriginal representation to advise council on the views and interests of Aboriginal people in this cabinet. The inclusion of an Aboriginal member aligned with the Council's Reconciliation Action Plan 2015-18 and also with the Council Plan 2017-21, goal of speaking with Aboriginal members. 7.2, authorizes the Director of City Communities to make necessary editorial changes to Attachment 2 to reflect the amendments outlined in paragraph 7.1.
Thanks, Councillor Sullivan. I call on Councillor Seaver, Councillor Francis Gillies, Councillor Sullivan.
Thank you, Acting Member Lord Mayor. Firstly, I'd like to thank the officers for the work undertaken and why I agreed to be a recommendation that is far overdue and very much needed. The Family and Children's Advisory Committee is something that I'm very proud to chair. Nothing is more important than children and families that make up our community. The committee encompasses members from all walks of life, people of different professions, races, ethnicities, and diverse family models. However, we recognised a gap and we felt deprived of a voice that was very much wanted and needed. Therefore, the committee wholeheartedly welcomes this recommendation from management to have Aboriginal representation. Further, this motion aligns with the City of Melbourne's goals, as stated in the motion. The organisation is also supporting its leaders and managers to attend cultural events training to better understand the issues that face our Aboriginal communities. And as recently as last week, our childcare staff were involved in training in relation to cultural safety in our centres to assist our young families to feel more welcome and embrace higher centres. My hope is that this initiative will encourage our organisations, boards, and communities to do the same and continue to respectfully acknowledge and incorporate traditional owners of the land in all we do.
Thanks, Councillor Sullivan. Councillor Francis Stewart.
Yes, thank you, President. I just really like to say thank you to Councillor Sullivan and also to employees to say that we're going to see deal with these movements tonight to ensure we've got Aboriginal place in our committees. I think it's clear from all that we do in council that we're really making this commitment to ensure that we have better and more consistent Aboriginal influence on all that we do. And so I'm really glad to say that.
Any other speakers to this motion?
Just to comment that very often when we're out speaking in the community, I find myself recognising the Indigenous community and especially the knowledge that's within our Indigenous community, which we don't adequately take on board. And I think a motion such as this, which ensures that that knowledge, that understanding of the Indigenous community will feed into our policies and actions. And I'm very pleased to support this.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Arthur.
Well, just to say that I certainly endorse this, that I want to thank the Chair of the Portfolio for recommending this, and I note that this is a process that should be undertaken for all the committees that she chairs, and as Councillor Francis Gillies points out, we're also talking about the Parks and Gardens Advisory Committee on tonight's agenda as well, but acknowledge all my colleagues have already spoken about, and it is exactly why it supports the recommendation as well.
Thanks, Councillor Aitken, speaks. If you're not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. The next agenda item is agenda item 6.4, the proposed permanent road closure of Elizabeth Street in Melbourne, the southbound carriageway between Flinders Way and Flinders Street. Would Councillor like a presentation on this item? If you're not, I call the Councillor to move the motion. Councillor Reese and planning, if you'd like to put your hand up, that'd be great. Thank you. I'm calling Councillor second that.
It's transport.
Councillor Reese. Councillor Reese.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Look, this is one of the most exciting projects in our city. As you've been recently reminding Melbourneans that with a daytime population of approaching a million in the next few years, we need to do more to make our city pedestrian friendly, and this project will do a significant amount in that regard, not just making the important part of the city pedestrian friendly, but also significantly beautifying it. And I think we will all look forward to being able to stand on that southern part of the street, look towards the iconic clock there at Flinders Street Station, and we'll remind ourselves how lucky we are to live in the world's most beautiful city.
Thanks, Councillor Reese. Councillor
I support this recommendation as the councillor who stood on that corner and made an announcement about this project a few times as the previous chair of the transport portfolio. I am glad that we've got to the next step, and I agree that it's not just a transport proposal, it's a placemaking proposal, but it's a very important part of our city, and it's a gateway to one of the busiest train stations. Tram network as well. It's important to make it pedestrian friendly as well, but I think the placemaking opportunities for this decision is also really key, and wholeheartedly support it and look forward to the next step in the announcements in this process that we're undertaking in the city for walking and more sustainable transport and placemaking, as I've already mentioned before. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor. I'll just say a few words on this one as well. It's been a long time coming, Councillor Oakley, you're exactly right. It'll be good to see this come to fruition. And when you look at the stats, 9,300 pedestrians using it in the morning peak, the numbers are very clear. 90% of them using that part of Elizabeth Street. Probably the pedestrians all using it as the tram interchange. So I think when you're talking about those sort of numbers, the opportunity to increase amenity and the widespread consultation that's gone on about this project over a very long time, it'll be good to get on and do this. Obviously the RSCB called for it to go all the way to Bourke Street, so this is a good step in the right direction in terms of the more pedestrian friendly boulevard that respects Flinders Street Station. Any other speakers to this? Councillor.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I certainly agree that the decision for us is pretty straightforward. It's just to get the statutory process of closing the road, but the closure of the road will be the catalyst for the renewal of Elizabeth Street South in future. And yes, it has been a very long time. Many councillors have made an election policy over multiple terms of council to do just this. Happy to keep relaunching that policy if it happens, but I'm excited to see this next stage. We've received submissions suggesting particular treatments for this part of Elizabeth Street in terms of design and street trading. Today is only, of course, a decision to complete that statutory process to close the road, and so it's not time to discuss the ins and outs of the design, but I'm sure that those submissions can be considered appropriately by the design team who will be working on the next stage.
Thank you. Thanks, Councillor. Any other speakers? Councillor Watts.
Again, just to comment, I think it would be a shame if we didn't make reference to people who make a living on this street. But I am confident of increased pedestrianisation, that the businesses, the retail developments on this street will be improved. It happens elsewhere in the world. We see evidence of this. So I think this is a step forward. And I
Councillor Watts. Any other speakers? Councillor Rees, do you wish to conclude? I need to put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. Our next item is agenda item 6.5, review of the Yirrumbloy First Nations Arts Festival 2017, development of the 2019 festival program. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, if not, I call on the councillor to move. Councillor Leavitt, do you call on the seconder? Councillor Wright, Councillor Leavitt.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I'm delighted to move this motion. Yirrumbloy this year was an astonishing contribution to the cultural life of the city, facilitated by the City of Melbourne, but much more importantly, curated and produced and directed and danced and performed by Aboriginal artists from Melbourne and around the country, and of course the First Nations Arts Festival from around the world. I'm really delighted to see the feedback that's been commissioned and reported in this report here for us. Clearly, the participants and the audience of this festival can see the incredible value that Yirrumbloy has, and really, of all the things we do at the City of Melbourne, nothing contributes to our Goal 9 aspiration to be a city with an Aboriginal focus more than this remarkable festival. So I wanted to start by sincerely thanking the entire team, from our creative director, Jacob Boomer, to all of the staff at Arts Melbourne, to all of the performers and artists who have made something incredibly special here in the middle of this state. I think the most important part of the report for us is all on page 12. We had our approved vision delivered in 2017, and there are a few suggestions for changes to the proposed vision for 2019. I think those changes are excellent and should definitely be endorsed today. I think usually we would consider approved meeting funds for the next festival, but I'm confident that there is support to hold a 2019 Yirrumbloy and start preparing for that right here and now. And hopefully this report is a catalyst for that as well. As the report points out, in order for the festival to be sustainable in the long term rather than annual, commitment to operational budget is recommended. So we will certainly be doing that in April. But for here and now, I think it should be enough of a sign to Credit Victoria and others that they are should be confident in partnering with us now to deliver an even better Yirrumbloy 2019. But again, can I just say how delighted I have been with the festival, the feedback from traditional owners and Indigenous artists directly to me, but also through this consultation report, and our staff here has been really done something special here, and I cannot wait for the next iteration.
Councillor Wright.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I wholeheartedly support the recommendation from management. I wish it was a little bit more exciting, to be honest. It says at 11.1 vote to the review. We should be celebrating the review. The feedback, if you haven't read it, I might read a little bit out. No, but I think the Chair of Art Portfolio, Councillor Leavitt, has already reflected on the feedback. But I think that some of the points made are incredibly important and reflect how I saw the festival, and I went every day and night, but also speaking to a lot of people that participated and attended. But I think really important, the stakeholders saw this clear cultural leadership that permeated and enriched the festival as a whole. This is evident in the tangible level of cultural celebration, respect and safety throughout the festival. But I think importantly, this part that has rarely been seen before. And importantly, that it was, it's an important and valuable addition to the Melbourne calendar, and very, very successful in showcasing the leadership of Indigenous artists, producers and directors. Personally, the opening night Welcome to Country at the meat market in North Melbourne was, I think, the event that I've been most proud of as a councillor to attend. It was an incredible event, and something that I wish that more of my colleagues had attended, and more council staff did as well. But it was incredibly, incredibly important, extraordinary event, and everyone was there, all the international guests, all of the Australian guests, all of the local guests, artists and or just visitors, were profoundly moved by the City of Melbourne's commitment to reconciliation through investing in a festival like this. And so I guess I'm not suggesting to change the words, but in the recommendation for management, it's at 11.2, it would be supporting this for resolving to proceed the development of 2019 Yeroboy First Nations Festival. I, in supporting this, are interpreting development as delivery, that we are proceeding tonight or supporting the delivery of the festival. And I acknowledge management's intention to put funds in, but I acknowledge that I intend to support funds for the next festival and beyond, because I've been involved in a lot of festivals here at the City of Melbourne and the Music Week I'm very proud of, but this one is unique and incredibly important. And yes, we want partners on board, we want Creative Victoria, we want others to come on board with funding and support the festival, but we need to retain that this is a City of Melbourne commitment to Indigenous culture, not only in Australia but around the world. And of course, as Council has mentioned, I wholeheartedly give full credit to Jacob and Shona and Arts Melbourne and Aboriginal Melbourne teams, and in particular the reference group with elders who played a critical part and will play a critical part moving forward.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other speakers? Is Councillor Press still?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I think there's two things really I'd like to say. One is that in the conversations we've had about this during, before, during, and after, I think there's one of the things that I think with people outside in the press and us as an organisation have struggled with a bit is wanting to have this art as a celebration of Aboriginal Melbourne. Something that we could be proud of. And I think that's what was delivered, exceptionally. And I think everyone's really proud of that. But I think in recognising that, there's something about, and we speak in our roadmap about acknowledging the history. And the history of Aboriginal Melbourne, like the history of all Aboriginal Australia, is one of pain and a dispossession of stolen children, of abuse, incarceration, of shorter lives. All of those things are true for Aboriginal people. And so art is the expression of love and pain and fear, right? And so I think we have to embrace as a council that every celebration in art is about pointing to a truth. And sometimes that's going to be painful, even if that's uncomfortable. And so for me, going and seeing some of those presentations reminded me of why it is uncomfortable to be a white person in this country. And I think that's his job. And I think what was exceptional about Yeroboy was that it upheld that, but upheld it in a way that honoured the traditional owners and they did with love. So I left shocked, but also really grateful that it had shocked me and reminded me of the country that I live in and what we might do to make it better. So I really want to acknowledge, the team for kind of holding that tension in a way that I thought was creatively and lovingly exciting. I think the other thing that I just wanted to say was that in terms of it coming around next year, I hope the Lord Mayor say that he hopes that the state government will be more involved, how we're going to fund it next year in terms of our commitment. And I think that's a really hopeful thing that the state government, in terms of all of their praise for this, could match the funding that we're putting in, or, say, look, we'll put in as much as you put in last year. I'm hoping that this can be bigger and better, not only just that we commit to it. I recognise that we're in the process of doing that, but my fellow councillor really want to say, I would be certainly wanting to support at least what the commitment we made last year, if not greater. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Franskillers. Councillor Rose.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I also concur with the comments of Councillor Oak and Councillor Francis Gilley about the future of this Yeroboy First Nations Arts Festival. I think one of the most amazing things about the City of Melbourne is our capacity to continue to innovate and do new things. And this is a festival that is still quite new in the arts calendar. I think this was only the third time that it had been held. And I just want to say, long may it continue, and long may it continue to grow and go from strength to strength, as it clearly is doing. This is one of the most exciting new things that are happening in this city, and in fact, in any city or state in Australia, and look forward to the meeting.
Yes, Councillor Reese, any other speakers to this one? Councillor Leavitt, do you want to close? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried on this week. Our next item is agenda item 6.6, and this will begin quite a few items on the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program. And this is the proposed design of the below ground operational area ATD sheds, including the preferred vehicular access point. Of the Council's live presentation on this item. I'm happy to move a slightly different motion than the recommendation. I'll read that out because we don't have the screens. The recommendation that Council approves the proposed design. The new words different to the recommendation in the papers is pending Heritage Victoria approval. So it reads, the Council approves the proposed design pending Heritage Victoria approval of the below ground operational area at the western end of the sheds AD and authorises the Director of City Design and Projects to make minor changes as required. And then it goes on as per the papers. The location of vehicular access at the Peel Street end of Shed D and approves the lodging of planning and heritage permit applications. And I call the Councillor Seddon that. Councillor Sullivan, thank you very much. As I said, this will be a big night for the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program and essentially will continue to be so right throughout the renewal, but this is a critical step in the design, and that is the below ground operational area under the A3D sheds. This is, I sort of have to take issue with one of our submissions that the below ground facilities and parking is a new concept. It's actually been, as part of the implementation plan and indeed the master plan, the intention was always to provide some low ground operational area. Indeed, what this does in splitting parking between the two sites, the Monroe site and under the markets themselves, it actually answers some of the feedback from traders to actually split that parking. The other part of this too is that there was much smaller footprint originally proposed because the basement will go deeper. So instead of being two levels, it'll be three levels with a mezzanine, all with services dedicated to traders. Things like showers and meeting areas and all these sorts of things that, that they don't have access to at this point. The increase in cost will be in the order of $11 million, which will be incorporated or absorbed within the existing budget. So no increase beyond the net cap that we've committed to. And the thing that this answers, the reduced footprint, two critical things that many people with a passion for the market have been asking for, and that's as little impact on heritage as possible. So the smaller footprint allows more of the sheds to actually stay in situ and be restored in situ, which is excellent, and more trade continuity, so we'll have less traders actually needing to move out of those sheds that will actually stay there through the duration of the project, and that will actually lead to a much smaller temporary market pavilion, in fact half the size, and that's good news for traders to be able to travel right through the process. I guess again too, this is a major step. Things like running water, refrigeration, parking, the ability to deal with the waste management in a much more efficient way, the ability to improve OH&S and security issues. That's what this below ground operational area will answer, and also the sort of 220-odd car parks in the basement, which means people will be able to jump in those lifts and pop up right there, right amongst the vibrancy of this open-air, fresh food market. Grab their food and drop straight back down, load their cars up and drive out. Some of the other initiatives in terms of the parking that will be incorporated is things like number plate recognition, so that we avoid the queuing out onto Peel Street, and indeed the fire options that were looked at for showing that the Peel Street end of Shed D is the safest option and the most efficient option, and also has been approved by the big roads as well. Councillor Sullivan.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. You've covered it all finally. Just briefly, just wanted to say that I'm excited that such an innovative and daring project continues to be undertaken. The renewal of this precious market is very much something that we all consider of utmost importance. As for my previous conversations, I just would like to reiterate the importance of accessibility and design of the plans, although obviously the one tonight's from a high level. I look forward to more extensive detail of the facilities available and improved how people move and integrate through the market, in particular for parents and parents and people with disabilities, which will benefit patrons, visitors and trades overall. Again, whilst these designs are not specific on this matter per se, I anticipate that the sophistication of this development temporary and necessary innovation to such facilities beyond the minimum compliance level, more than just, you know, adoption or changing tables, wider doors, ramps, clear signage, but a chance to be a leading example for inclusiveness and accessibility. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Sullivan. Anything else speaks to this item? Councillor Watts.
First of all, I'd like to thank officers for briefing so thoroughly this afternoon. I had a lot of concerns, and they worked very hard to explain various aspects. But sadly, I regret to say that my concerns remain. There are key elements in this renewal of design which have not been determined. Several lands of heritage, and although I'm told that what we're doing should achieve compliance with, should we be able to be QDM beyond the National Heritage List, there not be anything that would not comply. That to me is wrong-headed. First we get the listing and then we work on the plan. I believe this to be an unacceptable approach. This is an award, we don't know what protection actually would be awarded to this point in the heritage site in our city, in our nation. Now, in relation to Heritage Victoria and the permit that we seek, here, I understand that it's a chicken and egg situation. We have to put something forward in order to draw out Heritage Victoria. But in my view, what we're seeing here, there is still too much that's unclear in my mind. Much remains questionable. I'm interested that the National Trust has expressed serious concerns, which we may be able to reassure them on, but that they're there and that they have not been addressed is a concern. The Melbourne Heritage Action Group put forward serious concerns, and we clearly know that the wider community and the traders are deeply alarmed at the design. Now, it may well be, as has been put forward, there is meetings we've had that the community just doesn't understand. Well, we should be going forward until they do understand this. The degree of alarm that's been conveyed to me, that shouldn't be here at this point if things were going as they should be. That a group of people has put together a very serious and comprehensive alternative design, put it to us, and that we've chosen, it's cheaper, it is a glitch, and that the less disruptive, which is very important to me, and the trades, I'm sure, and that we'll be more socially, commercially, and physically able to minimise the disruption, and we're not to see it. Given that the bottom line here is that the QBN is a community asset, that the QBN is the premises in which traders make their living, surely such an alternate design put forward should have been seriously considered. It bothers me that such a, I would say, disrespectful approach has been taken. If there were ways to minimise disruption and lessen social and the risk to social and world heritage, well, then they should be looked at. Costs are a serious concern, and I'm not confident that all of the options have been ironed out yet. Yet we were supposed to go ahead with this, and we're not supposed to question this. In fact, I recall that we had some letters to our MC recently, and the Lord Mayor actually smothered in a negative comment, but just dismissing the very input from those who would know, because they actually work at the and shop at the Victorian Market. And I think it's quite right that we should have this very serious contribution considered before we go forward any further. So I am concerned around the traffic aspects. I'm aware that big roads have been consulted, but nothing actually definitive has come from them. I've read the documents and I've been briefed that a review has occurred. But that's not where we should be at going forward at this point. It seems to me that too many difficulties remain. In my view, we have to probably review all of this. To do otherwise is folly, and I would say provocative. Why not consider an option put forward by the community? Many traders, I actually attended the meeting where this proposal was, your term proposal was put forward, and I heard what people were saying. These are not people who don't understand what we're dealing with here. There is no way that such a proposal should not be considered. The officers find many of the elements unable to be implemented, so yet, but let's at least have a look. So why not consider it? It's hard for me to see why we're being told, you know, sort of, or the community's been told, oh, we can't, we must take action. To do nothing is not an option. Well, obviously, it's actually really disrespectful to go on with this line of renewal is not going to have to happen. We all know it.
Councillor, just with respect.
I nearly finished, you'd be pleased to know. As I said, to be continually told that it's either we do this or we don't do anything is humbug and a nonsense. There is furious agreement. This design is not at a state that I am happy putting forward, and so I would like to register that I'm voting against it. But very interestingly, and I think this is a point to be made in defence of the officers and in defence of the City of Melbourne, many of the criticisms that have been put forward to me, I realise, are not within our control. They are under the management of the QPM, and I feel that the City of Melbourne has in fact been not making it clear enough that this is the design and this is not management. So thank you for your patience. I rarely make such a long speech, but in this case, I believe it's necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I'll agree with Councillor Watson, this is a very challenging proposal, but I think that's the extent to which I can agree. The idea that we would wait for a termination on National Heritage listing is highly problematic. It would put our contract with the state government around the land swap and the financial penalties that come into play. It would be incredibly costly for Council to defer that here and now. But more importantly, the Queen Victoria Market is a heritage register. It has the highest level of heritage protection in the state of Victoria. Any action taken in this area must be granted a heritage permit before we can begin. So thank you, Lord Mayor, for moving this motion for adding those words, which I was an advocate for, to just make it very, very clear that the proposed designs here we are putting forward, but of course they will all be pending support of Heritage Victoria. If that support is not there, then obviously those plans cannot continue. So the National Heritage Listing issue is, I think, a bit of a distraction, and if it were to be acted on, it would be exposing the council to completely unacceptable financial risks. Certainly, there's enough here and now to proceed, knowing that Heritage Victoria must approve everything that goes forward. But as I said at the beginning, it's a very challenging decision for us. When we adopted the implementation plan towards the end of the last term, I specifically amended that resolution to require that this decision come back to council as a standalone decision. I wanted to put this decision up in lights after full assessment of heritage impacts have been undertaken, under traffic modelling, after traffic modelling had been undertaken, and after the retail plan had been released, and after consultations had been taken place with the trades representation group and others. All of those things have now happened. If this decision was a standalone decision without that 5 years of policy work, research and consultation in place, I'd be very uncomfortable supporting it. But the reasons I'm happy to support it today are essentially that an enormous amount of work is done to choose the vehicular entrance that has the least heritage impact on a heritage place. The land is sloped from Peel Street down to Elizabeth Street, and already the deed shed steps up. The roof you'll see isn't just a flat roof all the way along, it steps up. The lifting ever so slightly higher at the Peel Street end of the deed shed roof will be a negligible change to the shape of the heritage place. Of all of the options that are on the table, that is the one that has the least impact on heritage. I'm confident that Heritage Victoria will agree with that, but of course any proposal is subject to Heritage Victoria approval. So since that tweak to the implementation plan in the last term was made, such an incredible amount of work has been done. The reduction of the footprint in the underground services area to just over half of what was originally proposed is a result of that hard work to minimise as much as possible not only the impact on the heritage place, but the potential disruption to all traders during renewal. I think the fact that the ABD sheds will remain open and operating at where they butt Queen Street, which of course is also going to be where the temporary pavilion is going to go, means that there's going to be an operational, efficient, contiguous area of trading that is far preferable to what the original proposal was, and I sincerely thank our officers for coming up with this alternative design, because compared with what was originally proposed, yes, clearly this is going to be far less disruptive. It will still be disruptive. We are talking about trade continuity programs later on the agenda tonight. But I would just like to commend the work that has been done. It is an incredible amount of work. It is a very challenging decision that we have here. Of all the aspects of the Queen Victoria Market Recent Renewal Program, I think for me this is the most difficult, but I do thank officers for the work that they've done. There's a reason we pulled this out and asked for it to come to a standalone decision of council tonight. It's so that work will be done, so it will put up in lights, and I do thank officers for doing the very, very best they can to ameliorate the disruption that is going to occur during New York to traders. So I do thank the officers.
Thanks, Councillor Lepley. Anyone speak? If not, just a couple of...
Sorry.
Councillor Wright.
Sorry, I thought I'd ask the rest to speak.
Please feel free to jump in quickly, councillors.
No, sorry, I was turning to the slide. Much has been already presented, especially by Councillor Leppert. I, look forward to this coming back and supported the resolution that we put forward last year to make sure that happened. I have been in many conversations with a range of groups who are very interested, as I have committed customers over the long term or traders at QVM. And in recent days, we have a lot of consultation and discussion around this proposal, and there is a lot of relief in the reduction of the footprint for the underground facilities and also for the new market facility as well, so which allows for a greater or a reduction in disruption and continuation of trading. So I think that this design I support that aspect. I have a great concern to one of the dot points in the resolution last year around my concern around where the entrance would be for this underground car park. And I understand, although there's still not as much detail as I would have liked around the traffic data, I understand that it's there, and I understand that the decision or recommendation is based on that traffic report, but a bit more of the data around the impact of surrounding areas would be good, but I understand that it is the best location and based on a range of factors around community and safety for pedestrians, but also the very important trans stop on Peel Street as well as Victoria Street. So I understand and accept that recommendation. Like Councillor Sullivan, I see that even though the design that's presented to us is quite high level, there are a lot of opportunities, and I understand that it is there, opportunities for best practice, not only for accessibility, not just for disabled patrons, but traders as well, and providing not just what's required in the building code, but for compliance, but also best practice for you know, the range of facilities that we provide. And that also goes also for vehicles, not just for cars, but for bikes, bike parking for traders, also for visitors, but also e-charge facilities and electric vehicles, and making sure that the design includes all of this, so that we are investing, that we're investing in the absolute future of technology as well. And importantly, the acting Lord Mayor mentioned these underground facilities, which is one of the reasons why I've gone along in this process, is that the opportunities it provides for the waste management. We have a huge lost opportunity, I believe, over many years at the market around our management of waste, and particularly the reduction of organic waste to landfill. There have been some trial and error, but it certainly hasn't worked, and I think this is certainly a lot of effort, and I acknowledge the work that the C40 group has contributed in our thinking around sustainability at the market, but the management of waste, the use, reuse of waste, and not sending it to landfill is incredibly important, and that is that's key to the design that is in front of us. Tonight, I agree with Councillor Watts with regard to engagement and communication, and we, you know, sincerely, and there's other items on the agenda tonight about how we work better with the community and market management in our expectations around engagement and communication, but certainly agree that it's not just the one side, it's both sides, and we need to make sure that we are articulating and talking about this, in particular communicating about the alternative designs that have been put forward by the community or by a particular group. We need to be communicating as to which elements of those proposed designs actually are complementary to what we're doing, or why the reasons why we may not be accepting of them. And I certainly happy to speak to anyone about that. I've actually due to a very tragic death in the last couple of weeks. I mean, I've actually had to communicate with traders who have contacted me about that, but I'm happy to speak to anyone about the reasons why I haven't in the last 2 weeks about that. I just haven't had any remedy in the last 2 weeks. But I support the recommendation, but understand that it is pending, and importantly, pending Heritage Victoria approval. Very important to me that that takes.
Thanks, Councillor Rankin. That's Peters. You know, I'm going to just close with a few points. I think Councillor Leavitt outlined very clearly the process, and Councillor Leavitt reinforced it. But what this recommendation or this motion says is pending Heritage Victoria approval. So, once again, we're putting our designs before all of the relevant agencies, as we have done right throughout the process. I take issue with this idea that we haven't put this project to question. It's been a subject of an election. It's been a subject of 70 reports. It's been a subject of a very long process of questioning which rightly should continue, because there's a lot of passion for this, much like ICON, that we all are very passionate about. That doesn't mean you don't proceed. That doesn't mean that once you have continue that consultation, continue to take those changes on board, as we've seen even with the below ground basement design, responding to those questions around, you know, can we get greater trader continuity, can we reduce the impact and keep heritage sheds in situ and restore them in situ. We're constantly refining that design with the feedback that occurs. The Trader Reference Committee is involved in every step of the way. Our project team, Queen Victoria Market Management, are literally out walking the market to hear that feedback all the time. Are we answering every concern? Absolutely not. It's a very dynamic environment, but I'm comfortable with the sort of processes that we've put ourselves to. And, you know, these involve things like a letter of comfort from the Jewish community that we're not going to impact on their grave sites, but the commitment to to not go within a certain distance of the Aboriginal burial sites. And just touching on the alternative design, again, I respect that alternative design that's been put forward, but and this is just my personal view, speaking personally, I don't think a raised car park on a heritage site, on a burial site, is overly respectful. I don't think a raised car park, which essentially splits this great market from the central city, and goes against exactly what we're trying to achieve, and that is to knit this great market even further into the fabric of our city, is a good move. The below ground facilities answer so many of the concerns that have been raised by the traders for such a long time. The facilities that the traders have asked for that will assist them in their businesses being sustainable in the future. We need to keep working hard, working with individual traders about where their business is going, where they're actually going to be located through the renewal process, and that is an ongoing process. We recognise that this is about people, it's not about logistics, and we've got to keep working hard at that. So I don't think in any way, shape or form that the process that we've gone through with Heritage Victoria approval, with this, led to the comfort from the Jewish community, with the archaeological surveys that we've done to determine where those sites are, is disrespectful. In fact, I think it's the absolute opposite. That the respect for the market, and you'll see later, as Councillor Leppert has alluded to, there are many items on QVM tonight, the statement of expectations talks to all some of the concerns that the friends of have, that is this going to be an open air market in the future? Is this going to be a fresh food market in the future? This is all in the statement of expectations. So every step of the way, we're working hard to reassure those that are deeply passionate about this market that we are too, because we're actually part of this community and want to see it continue into the future. When you look at 10.3, it talks to the council approves the lodgement of planning and heritage permit applications. So this design has to go through an application process just as any other proposed development would do. So there's a whole other set of processes to go through as well. So every step of the way, we're approving business cases, we're approving funding models, we've got project reports, and we've got an ongoing consultation process, which I think is evolving and will continue to evolve into one of the best consultation processes that we've seen as we start to get to that individual case, which is so important. So I'm very comfortable that after 5 years and many failed attempts at guaranteeing the sustainability of the Queen Victoria market, and if you look at the SDS report, it says quite clearly that if we do nothing, we don't guarantee the sustainability of the cyclone, that it's time to keep moving in a respectful way to get this project done. With that, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? Acting Lord Mayor, Councillor Leppert, Councillor Oak, Councillor Riley, Councillor Reese, Councillor Sullivan, Councillor Woody, Councillor Francis Billy, Councillor Lynn Luke, all those against, Councillor Watts, I declare that carried. Next item is item 6.7, and that's the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program Reserve Quarterly Report. Councillors like presentation this item? No. I'm happy to move this item. Have all the councillors second. Thanks, Councillor Leppert. As we've touched on, there's a number of QVM reports up this evening. And we look at the quarterly report, that what we're seeing here is a genuine, so questions are asked rightly so along the way. How are you going to fund this redevelopment? What's going to happen in the redevelopment? And I think when you look at the report on the program reserve quarterly report, you see just how serious we are about funding this project, the largest project in the City of Melbourne's history. What you'll see there is that we're getting close to $75 million in funds dedicated to this project. And that's a really large sum of money that's there to support this project. And indeed, when you look at the first phase of works, close to $110 million of this. It was a real irony for me that $110 million of this project is actually spent on what the trade So the bulk of this project spend is actually on ensuring that we've got training in the future. So I think it shows that we're very serious about the project. I think it gives a good idea that the project funding strategy is sound, and we'll continue to see this project funded in the future. Councillor.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I agree. It's fantastic to see this level of transparency in the way that the QBNPR fund has been managed to date. $16 million in and $12 million out, but of course, the imminent injection of another $60 million in the next few weeks, really. So now is when we're seeing the first incredibly big step up in the size of the fund. It does show the seriousness that the council has in implementing the renewal program as efficiently as possible. I think that now that the business case update has been released, which quite clearly shows the capital works plans for each quarter of the market and market cross, so there's five different areas that we could even look to providing even more detail in these reports in future. I've also had conversations with management about that already, and I won't foreshadow exactly what I'm after here and now, but this is this could be the budget tracking tool that so many are calling for. It is a transparent account of where the cash is coming from and where the cash is going to, and I do thank management for this circle of transparency.
Thanks, Councillor Levy. Any other speakers? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. Our next item is agenda item 6.8, and that is the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program Continuing Business Framework. Councillor, a presentation on this item. We might just give a brief presentation on this item.
3, Graham and Lord Mayor, the purpose of this report is to seek endorsement of the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Continuing Business Framework. This was in direct response to a Council resolution of August 2016. Consistent with that recommendation, we've been working with QBM on what the framework might look like and the mechanisms around that framework. And the output of that work is reflected in the report this evening. Importantly, within the framework, there are two key components. There is a trade support fund and a trade support program. Both of those components of the framework are actually designed to support traders through the renewal period, mitigate impacts, realise opportunities, and facilitate business development opportunities for traders right throughout the renewal period. In order to do this, you'll see in the report that the council will allocate at least $8 million over the renewal period towards the trade support framework. The recommendation from management is that the council endorses the continuing business framework and authorises management to take the next steps in appointing a trade support fund advisory committee to oversee the trade support fund and to also implement the trade support program. There are some refinements that we would like to do in terms of trade support fund and in particular establishment rules. And I will foreshadow Lord Mayor if you act a little bit again. Forward some modest changes for that to enable those changes to occur. Thank you.
Thanks, Fu. Any questions for Fu? I'm happy to move. So just some slightly different readings I'll read out to the papers. And that is the council endorses the establishment of the continuing business framework and authorised management to take next steps to support the Trade Support Fund Advisory Committee and implement the Trade Support Program. And the changes to 10.2 authorise the Chief Financial Officer to finalise the establishment rules after considering feedback from QBM traders and the Trade Support Fund Advisory Committee, having notified councils of any substantive changes. And I call on councillor to second that.
Thank you.
Question?
I do have a question. If I could just ask
for food.
Yes, I'm just not sure. I imagine we don't have the detail yet, but it's going to occur. Sorry, comments to you. I'm just particularly assuring, I think, on this one matter, that we are going to be prepared to provide much more than the license fee for the public.
through you, Acting Lord Mayor, in response to your question, Councillor. There is a number of components to this framework. One is the Trade Support Fund, and one is the Trade Support Program. There will be additional funding available in addition to any sort of fee rebate as part of this program. What's really useful about this program is that we have seek feedback and input from various parts of the community, as well as ourselves, and achieve them on how we can support traders during this renewal period. So there is a number of options available within that trade support program.
There's one more element to keep in mind. The material we've got before us, a claim must be made on a business proof basis rather than on store or shop basis.
Sorry, can we talk about
it? Yes, it's on page 12 of the document here. The claim must be made on a business group basis rather than on a store or shop basis. What's meant by that?
I'll have to take the question on notice, Councillor. As was alluded to today, we're working through and we really want to make sure that this fund operates effectively. So, as we lose the fine tuning to this fund, any substantive change will bring it back to Council. But the intent is really to support traders throughout the renewal period, and there can be a demonstration that the renewal has impacted business, then that's where we will support the trading.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. So I'll put that motion as I read out previously. That and the report was seen in Council 11. Thanks, Council 11. I know this sort of seems like a number of elements of the project that are joining up, as it should. So we've talked about investment in the renewal. We've talked about the capital works element of the renewal. And this is an absolutely critical point about trade support through the renewal process. What we believe and what the business case has shown in the SGS report has shown that this renewal is going to enhance the market success in the future. And one of those really critical points is just through the implementation of the low ground facilities and parking and investment in that area, that when we get to the end of the renewal, we'll double the tradable area between Victoria and Market. So I know that there's a lot of questions around what will happen through the renewal and what sort of things we don't expect. But when you think about just that stat alone, we'll double the tradable area of the Queen Victoria Market in the future. What an exciting prospect for more traders to come into the mix, for diversity of traders to come into the mix. This is an exciting opportunity. But we've got to support our existing traders through the renewal process, and that's why this continuing business framework is so important. As Drew said, it's broken into two areas. The trade support fund is, for me, a safety net. So $8 million of safety net that is there to support traders who can demonstrate a material impact to their business as a result of the renewal. We believe that that's not going to occur. If we get this right, then if all the reports that are supporting this renewal are right, then we think that trade support fund will see very little activity. I want to make the point, the important point though, that the purse strings aren't going to be tied up on that by any means. But if trade demonstrates that they're impacted by this renewal, they will be supported through that fund. And that's really important. Probably the more important thing from my perspective is the trade support program, because that's actually an investment in the traders. So the trade support fund is sort of helping someone out if they see an impact. The trade support program is investing in the traders that make the market what the market is. And we're talking about business mentoring, we're talking about assistance even with things like visual merchandising, arranging of stalls, working out capacity, all sorts of issues that many businesses, small business, I'm a small business owner myself, I've benefited a lot from a lot of the VEPI programs over the years that have assisted me, with really simple things. When the GST came, I can assure you that I was relying heavily on business support through that process. So that's exactly the sort of thing that this trade support program will go towards. That's yet another investment in the traders of the market. The great thing about this is that the Trader Reference Committee and traders will have input into the sorts of things that trader support program is spent on. So I think that's a hugely exciting development for this program, and I think again, we get that right. What we're going to ensure is that we're keeping the best of what people love about the market, but we're helping small businesses to effectively meet really tougher trading conditions. We know that for small business things have got tougher. Councillor.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Regardless of what our different positions are on the renewal as a whole, I think we've all agreed that the next few years have the potential to be very constructive for traders at the market. I was delighted in August in moving that motion to support and establish a continuing business fund in principle, that what we've got back here is so much more than that. It's immeasurably better than what I imagined in August. We have got funds to compensate those traders who obviously are going to be affected. I feel that will be as small as possible, but as you said, Acting Lord Mayor, the trade support program as well has been incredibly well thought through, and I'm very optimistic about the benefits that that will have for all of the traders. We're not building, we're not just doing Queen Victoria Market renewal for future traders and for different types of traders. Existing traders are the lifeblood of the market here and now. I am concerned, and I suppose to an extent it's natural, but I'm very concerned about those traders who have decided in the context of renewal that now is a good time to leave their long association with the market. There's always going to be a proportion of traders who are going to fit into that boat faced with a lot of change and disruption that a renewal will inevitably bring. I'd like to keep the number of losses of traders to the smallest number possible, and that is very difficult to do, but that is why I moved in principle establishment of this fund in August, and that's why I'm very grateful to officers for improving that concept out of sight and creating a trader support program. The renewal, of course, won't be worth doing if the end result is a mix of traders that doesn't have that fantastic variety and diversity of ethnicities, of business types, of expertise, and of family connection. So supporting everything that makes the market what it is, and that is the trade community, is absolutely fundamental to me throughout this renewal process. And so I thank Fu and Rob and Joe for designing this twin project of the fund and the support program, which on first reading I'm very optimistic will do a lot to help all traders throughout the renewal process. The fund will be administered separately to the Queen Victoria Market Management. I think for the sake of perception and for the sake of good governance, that is something that we should highlight. The robust governance process around administrating that fund is quite clearly set out in this document. I am sure that that will be communicated very clearly to the trader representative group and to all traders as well. And so I'm looking forward to supporting and nurturing and retaining all of the traders throughout the renewal process, the traders that make the market what it is. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other speakers to this one? Councillor Preston.
Just briefly to say, Mike, I agree with Councillor Lepard. Also, just like to thank the staff for their willingness to bring this to us quickly, but also at the same time, this amendment that allows for real engagement with trade to ensure that the details of this really do meet their needs. So just thank you for that openness and willingness to engage.
Any other speakers? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. Our next item is the 6.1, which is the Queen Victoria Market Statement of Expectations. Council, what presentation on this item? No. If not, I'm happy to move slightly different than in the papers, and that is that the Council approves the replacement of expectation one with recognise, protect and expand the market's original and primary role as a fresh food market. 7.2 approves the statement of expectations of the Queen Victoria Market Proprietary Limited as amended above. And 7.3 requests the CEO to communicate to the board of Queen Victoria Market Proprietary Limited Council's explicit view that sheds HMI should remain predominantly for the purpose of fresh produce trading upon the standard of council level. Thank you. This statement of expectations is a really important one, I know, for all of us on council. That again, there are rightly, when there's a period of change, a lot of questions about what that change will bring, and also as an individual trader, where will I be at the end of all this change? Councillor mentioned that if we don't retain as much of the current fabric of the market, then we lose something very special about the market. And so, with the trade support fund and program, you know, one thing that I would say to traders is that if you want to stick with us, we'll stick with you. And that's, I hope, we're starting to see how much we're putting behind this, how much QVM management is putting behind this, and each of these facilities or motions that we're moving are all about retaining as much of the market life and vibrancy as possible as we go through this renewal process, and then once we're through the renewal process to really take it to the next level. The statement of expectations is a statement as from us as a shareholder, with Queen Victoria Market being a wholly-owned subsidiary of City of Melbourne. That's our expectation of QVM management. And I think that you can see there in black and white some of the questions which may have been asked about whether it's going to remain an open air market. You can see that it absolutely is. Is it going to remain, retain its fresh produce history and into the future? Absolutely. Even getting down to some of those concerns by submitters about HMI sheds, are they going to remain predominantly fresh produce? Again, you can see that exactly here tonight. That's the undertaking that we're making, that's the expectation that we have as the investor in this renewal process. So I hope that this statement of expectations meets a lot of the concerns that have been raised as we progress through the consultation process, the ongoing consultation process that this renewal brings with it. And I hope that this shows how serious we are about retaining and protecting the best of the Queen Victoria market while ensuring it's sustainable in the future.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I agree. Key performance indicators, or whatever you like to call them, for the Victoria market, I would imagine there's something that's been discussed quite a lot over the course of the last year, certainly during the election campaign again as well. And I think you've done a good job, Lord Mayor, in describing the balance between the two purposes of what is a very important document. The first, of course, is straightforward, we're issuing a statement of expectations to the board. They will need to respond to that. I trust that a five-year plan will be developed after this statement is issued. That's a requirement in the way that the companies get constituted. And so I'm very much looking forward to that. And the second purpose is that clear communication from the council to the world, if you like, that this is what we see in the market as being during and post-renewal. I think there's been a lot of information flying around that hasn't always been a truthful representation of council's expectations. Again, we need to also acknowledge that we need to constantly be very clear, and sometimes that means short documents which explain our position on things. I've occasionally had mixed messages from QVM management, traders and others about just what the council expects the market to be, and certainly heard a lot of theories that council and management are happy to let the fresh food aspects of the market diminish proportionally to the overall output of the market. That's never been the case. This document reasserts that that is not the case. This is primarily, always has been, a fresh food market. function to be sustainable for generations and generations to come. So that is the most important part of this document, the communications piece, and I thank officers for putting it together. I think it really is a remarkable document, and I am hoping that it will allow for some of those miscommunications that are occurring to be addressed. A specific issue that has come up time again since, again, I amended the implementation framework last term, around age and eye shares. Council was clear in the implementation framework that the sale of fresh fruit and veg in the age and eye shares must continue post-renewal. It's been interpreted by some that one stall is enough and the rest of the age and eye shares can be devoted to other purposes. No, that was never the intention, so let's reiterate here and now, and thank you, Acting Lord Mayor, for adopting this sentiment and moving the motion, that the predominant use of H&I shares is for the ongoing sale of fresh produce. I'm hoping that that is now clear and we can put that particular conspiracy theory to bed. So thank you to you, Acting Lord Mayor, for putting that in motion as well.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other speakers? Councillor Ryan.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I think the statement of shareholders' expectations and putting it in writing is a milestone for the City of Melbourne. In my time here, I've not seen this before. But I do also believe that the board and management of the Queen Victoria Market do believe and can do everything that is within contained in this document. And I feel very positive that this will be a great outcome.
Any other speakers? So, Councillor Watts.
Very briefly, to say I think this is an important motion. It does signal our intent. It will put to bed, I think, some of the alarm around the whole redevelopment. And I think we're in some way responsible for that alarm. I noticed in the documents we discussed earlier in the design, there are four pop-up areas around the ramps that have been proposed. But when I questioned officers today, the pop-up was not set in concrete. They were not sure what those spaces were going to be. So we have to be very careful that we don't cause problems for ourselves in then putting more areas of, as simple as this. This motion actually says what we want the market to be and makes it clear to the management. So I think it's a good motion.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Any other speakers? Councillor Ryan.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I, like my colleagues, feel a level of comfort in being able to put forward our expectations in writing and endorse it at a council meeting. I think there has been, I don't think it's necessarily fair to say that it's a conspiracy theory. So I think that there has been a bit of miscommunication in from our side and also from the management side about what is happening and what is the expectations of what will be after the renewal. And I think that it's good for us to get in writing what I believe we've always believed, but it hasn't necessarily been articulated well in some of the plans and also articulated who's in charge of which plans. And I think that yes, there's the role that we're playing, and then there's obviously the important operational role that the market manager plays. But to some degree, I have to see this as the base level expectation. I mean, we're very clear in reiterating in the motion, but also in the words around the primary role as a fresh food market and recognising, protecting, and expanding. I think it's an important amendment. AGI, very, very important to me, and it's not about me, it's about the people who I speak to and the people who I've been going to the market with for over 30 years, that AGI section of the market and why they go to the market about the stalls that are there, and that's why they'll continue to come after renewal. So very important to articulate AGI shares as a fresh food trading space to me. I said base level expectations. I think that it's not about respecting this expectation document, but the social and environmental outcomes, I think, is very base level. I think demonstrating efforts to reduce waste and minimise environmental impacts. I expect that when the plan comes back, that actually will be above demonstrate efforts. It needs to be demonstrate best practice personally. about reducing waste to minimise environmental impacts. And likewise, you know, in terms of social outcomes, that is more than just, it's very important about engaging the local community and providing local ownership, because it's a local community that has a great local ownership already and needs to maintain, but I think social outcomes get included a lot more than that. And so I look forward to the board's and management's interpretation of this when it comes back to us. But yes, I feel good that we've got it in writing, and hopefully it's endorsed tonight, you know, the way that we expect relations and also the outcomes moving forward.
Thanks, Councillor. Just a couple of closing comments. Just to report, we'd like to call Vera, the chair of QVM, here this evening, and to acknowledge that with this statement of expectations, if it passes tonight, and it appears that it will, that the board is comfortable with this statement of expectations, which is hugely important. And I agree with Councillor Oak that, you know, in a big move forward project like this, sometimes the communication has been, we've had it right. And that happens, and the onus is then on to pick that up and to work through it. Admittedly, there's been some elements who have chosen to try and purposely kind of disrupt the communication, and that's unfortunate, because when we're talking about small business owners, when you know, having information spread disingenuously, I think that's pretty tough on small business operators. Councillor Leppard alluded to a few of things, and I think that this statement of expectations is something that all of us as councillors are hugely thankful for in terms of management working this up. You know, things like, you know, make it general merchandise, you know, that was kind of some of the comments that I've heard, where you can see it says recognise and protect the market's original and primary roles as a fresh food market. You know, I've heard people say it's going to become, you know, largely standard in supermarkets. Well, we've got an item there that says ensure trade in retail space supports independent retail and small and medium sized businesses, not large chains or supermarkets. You know, this I think works through point by point, as Councillor Oak said, what we've thought all along, and the reason that we've been so supportive of this renewal, because this is exactly the sort of thing that we want to see once we get to the end of the renewal. But I think making it explicit is an excellent move, and I'm wholeheartedly in support of it. I call that to vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. Item 6.10 is passing government advisory committee terms of reference 2017-21, assuming that there's a presentation this item. So I'll call the council to move. Motion, Councillor Oak. Is that seconded? Councillor Rees. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. The purpose of the report is to seek endorsement for an updated terms of reference for the Parks and Garden Advisory Committee. The changes are certainly not a reflection on their committee and their track record of being an exceptional advisory group to the City of Melbourne for many years now. Is a reflection on our changing priorities, some key stakeholders that we certainly need to be permanent members on the advisory group, and certainly expanding the input from community representatives as well as the technical expertise that we have been very fortunate in receiving excellent feedback and input into key projects in our Parks and Gardens. Importantly, as referred to at the start of tonight's meeting, the revised update in terms of reference explicitly recognised the importance of having Aboriginal representation not only from a community but also from a technical aspect, and that refers and reflects Councillor Watt's acknowledgement again also at the start of the meeting about Aboriginal knowledge, and so Aboriginal knowledge is not only as a community, as a representative, as a resident of the City of Melbourne, or someone from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander descent, but also from understanding traditional practices from our traditional custodians, and certainly Parks and Gardens and in our landscape team, our commitment to reflecting caring for country principles in an urban environment. It's important to have that expertise represented on our Parks and Gardens Advisory Committee. And so I look forward to seeking out those experts and welcoming them. In terms of the process, the existing Parks and Gardens Advisory Committee
had their last meeting last week, and appointed the new call for the community representation will be advertised by, and assuming and hoping that the terms of reference are adopted tonight, that the new members will be called for by the 11th of September. They'll close, the advertisement will close on the 8th of October. We'll be advertised in newspapers, obviously on our website, email, to our extensive contacts, sort of networks of folk that are interested in the space, that are residents, groups, etc. And also libraries and community centres, and then they will be reviewed and appointed by the November meeting. So I thank the Parks and Gardens Advisory Committee for helping and providing feedback into strengthening our terms of reference, and obviously acknowledge our team, our excellent Parks and Gardens team, Kathy Kirsten, Kath Lovell, each in particular, in going through the process that we have.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Bruce. Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. As Deputy Chair of the Environment Portfolio, I am also delighted to be able to endorse the updated terms of reference for the Parks and Gardens Advisory Committee. Of course, Great City Like Melbourne is a compilation of many great decisions which build on each other, and undoubtedly one of the greatest decisions that's ever been made in the history of this city was the decision of Lieutenant Governor Charles Latrobe to establish our botanical gardens, and we've been custodians of those gardens ever since, and these new terms of reference will help us turn the next page.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Bruce, any other speakers? If not, I'll put that to the back. All those in favour?
Just a comment. I can see that although we very much appreciate the gardens we've already had, I imagine the new form of our urban market will require different sorts of gardens. Rose painted, reclaimed, and pocket parks, and all of that. So we may well be needing a different form of expertise than the nation of gardens.
Thanks. Councillor Ross, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously. Our next item is item 6.11, that's proposed to Governor Hamburg in Brussels in October 2017. I'm assuming we'll go for the presentation on this item, and I'm actually happy to move it. And I'll call on Councillor Second. Yes, Councillor Lee Clue. Happy to support this. This is actually part of a 12-month program that Council has been involved in. There's been exchange where they've had a delegation come here. We now go in there, and then I understand there's a delegation coming back again. And this is a program which is looking at a range of issues which are really important to many of our strategies and plans, planning data and smart use of that data in terms of urban planning processes and decision-making, digital community interface and living labs, and also governance, which I know is a favourite topic of Councillor Leavitt, so we'll be very ably represented in that sense. And I'm only too happy to support his trip to Hamburg and to Brussels. Councillor Leavitt, nothing to add. Any other speakers? If not, that's a vote. All those in favour, declare that carried unanimously. That concludes the reports from management to be considered in open session. There are no items of general business for consideration in open session. Are there any items of urgent business? No. I now call on Councillor to move a motion displayed on the screen, which is not closing the open meeting. Thanks, Councillor Riley. Is that seconded? Councillor Reese, put that to vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. I wish to thank the members of the public for their interest and attendance, and declare the open meeting closed to the public at 7:04.